2012 International Consumer Electronics Show.
Good morning, everybody. Ooh, that's loud. Good morning, everybody. Let's try it again. How about good morning, Marty? Good morning, everybody. Welcome to Spotlight on 3D Content. The topic here is consumers frequently report lack of content as an obstacle to widespread 3D adoption, but most industry conferences tend to focus on technical aspects of integration of 3D into consumer electronics. We're going to have leaders here. We do have leaders here from throughout the industry talking about what their plans are. I'm going to ask each of the leaders to take a moment or two to let you know who they are, where they work, what their role is within 3D, and then we'll move on from there into some of our discussion. First is Brian Burns of ESPN 3D.
Sure, Marty. Good morning to all of you. My name is Brian Burns. I'm the person at ESPN that coordinates a group that we have that is called the 3D Operating Group that operates the channel that we announced here at CES about 2 years and a week ago. We announced it here. We actually launched with the World Cup in the summer of 2010, and we did our 188th live telecast last night as we did the Bowl Championship Series championship game from the Superdome in New Orleans. And that's who I am and what I do.
Tom Cosgrove.
I'm Tom Cosgrove. I'm President and CEO of 3Net, which is a joint venture channel with Discovery, Sony, and IMAX. And we launched last February. One of the first 3D, fully programmed 3D channels in the world. Today we have the largest library of native 3D shots for television content in the world, and we are a linear channel. We are also a 3D studio, and our content currently is on linear cable here in the States. Can you hear me? We got audio. How's this? I'll just talk like this. The voice of God. Anyway, we are a content producer and also a linear channel. Our content is on devices around the world. We have distribution deals for our content around the world. And that's who we are, and I'll say it again later so you can hear me.
Okay. Next is Vince Pace, co-chairman of Cameron Pace Group.
Hi, everyone. I'm Vince Pace, and I've been working with Jim Cameron for the last 12 years in designing technology that transitions 2D entertainment into 3D entertainment, you know, with a real focus on trying to create both the creative support and the financial economics of 3D as we try and build the landscape of 3D entertainment.
And Bob Zitter from HBO.
Hi, I'm Bob Zitter from HBO. I'm Chief Technology Officer. I'm involved with new things that we do that have a beginning in technology, and once they become mainstream, some good business people at HBO usually take it out of my hands. HBO is a pay television, a subscription television service. We have about 95 million subscribers around the world. We began 3D in the United States. At the beginning of 2010. We don't do it as a linear channel. HBO is available on demand to most of our subscribers, and about 9 million subscribers have HBO 3D available to them. What we do is we offer theatrical motion pictures that are produced in 3D, any of them that are produced in 3D that are on the HBO slate. Are offered at no additional charge to our subscribers. It's a value proposition. We've been doing some testing and learning, is I guess a better phrase, about production of original programming that we do in 3D. So we can talk more about that.
Very good. Thank you. You know, we have a unique opportunity here today at this opening panel for CES. There's a broad cross-section of the industry in the room today. In attendance, most likely, are going to be representatives of companies that are all across the broad spectrum of 3D, from the TV manufacturers to the companies involved in broadcasting and telecasting, to the many broadcast and cable networks, and the distributors such as Comcast, Time Warner, and DirecTV and Dish, among others, as well as the many mobile device vendors that are going to be very, very prevalent at this show over the next several days. We have an opportunity to listen here and discuss and to assess how best to move forward. How do we grow 3D content for the benefit of the entire TV ecosystem? This could really take up a whole day's worth of sessions. We're going to try and squeeze this in for the next half hour, 45 minutes, and then leave some room for questions from you, answers from our panelists. So let's talk a little bit about the state of 3D today. Basically, by most accounts, there's a chicken and egg problem. You know, there's just not enough content. The naysayers say that it won't really happen until there's more TVs, and a lot of the content producers say we can't produce content unless there's more TV universe out there, more viewers. So, you know, Tom, your company is owned by Sony Discovery and IMAX. Sir Howard Stringer has issued a mandate about 3D. IMAX is great 3D presentation, and Discovery was really among the pioneers in HD, if not the pioneer, among the first to really go wide with it. Brian, ESPN has produced more 3D programming than almost anyone else at this juncture, probably anyone else. Vince, there are a few others that have more experience on set and in broadcast environments in 3D than you and your team. And Bob, HBO is a leader as both a buyer and a producer of compelling content. So the question really is, how do we solve the chicken and egg issue easily, or do we really need to have some patience and let the infrastructure and ecosystem grow organically as it did with 3D feature films?
Well, Tom? I think the good news is what we're seeing is that the market is evolving in a way that the devices, whether it's can you guys hear me this time around? Yeah, okay. Whether it's the televisions, whether it's mobile devices, what have you, they're going to be out there by the end of this year. You know, there's a lot of hype at the CES a couple years ago when this whole thing started, and I think, you know, there was some feeling that 3D is going to take over HD and all of that. That was never really the case. I think what's going to happen is we're going to be running in tandem with HD. It's going to be a choice that people make. You know, by the end of this year, projections are there'll be, you know, 10 to 14 million 3D sets in the U.S. There are already 90 million devices, be it Blu-ray players, televisions, gaming devices, what have you, globally in the hands of consumers already. So I think it's just a matter of that platform getting out there, being laid out there, and then it's on us to come up with the compelling content to really drive interest. And so I think this is the year when we're going to start to see enough of that platform out there where the content providers can finally sort of get their stuff out there and get it seen in a much broader base in the home.
Brian?
I think we've seen this movie before. We've been down this path before. This is not new. This is so much like 2002 and 2003 when Tom and Company first took off with HD, then we came in. It didn't really matter who was first and who was second or third. That wasn't really the point at all. It isn't the point now. This is an evolutionary process. And while I think sometimes that we at ESPN may have hit the on-ramp a year early, clearly the highway is being built. And I get encouraged when I see set manufacturers make announcements that a higher percentage of their screens are going to have 3D inside. That's very important to all of us. It reminds me of the days when I used to go to Walmart in the early HD times and see that they had 55 screens on the shelves, and two were HD, and then five, and then 10, and then 30. I mean, the 60 never changed, but the percentage changed. We're going through that now with 3D. And when that base of sets starts to move into the marketplace, when more and more of our distribution partners, be it satellite, cable, or telco, bring it into their systems to bring it to your house, then the infrastructure's in place for those of us who are involved with the content business to make things available to the public to drive usage of the things that are already in the house. We now have seen the seeds that we have planted start to sprout, and that makes it a very exciting time for those of us who are involved with 3D.
Yeah, I'd like to maybe pick up on the analogy with HD. When we were discussing internally doing 3D at HBO, I guess it was about 3 years ago, my head of programming asked me, well, when do you think there's going to be 10 million sets out there? And I said 2012, and so we're just about, you know, there. In 1999, January 1999, when CBS and HBO were the first to start national networks in HD, there were some differences, and I think it's helpful to look at some of the differences and the similarities. When we started a 24-hour HD network, 48% of our programming was in true HD. Now, motion pictures weren't being mastered in HD. I mean, they were mastered in film. So we were able to go back and take films that were aired on television or going to air on television or video and remaster them in HD. We can't do that affordably in 3D. So in 3D, HBO started 3D, and we're running about 12 new movies a year, any movie that's produced in 3D. So the volume needs to grow, and there's not a cost-effective way to go back and make things that were made in 2D available in 3D. And as I say, cost-effective. But then that began to grow. In terms of original programming, we've been getting up the learning curve, but it took us in HD, I think, about 4 years before we moved from theatrical to our first original programming in HD. And I'm talking about series. Our first HD series was The Sopranos. And again, one of the things that, you know, we're looking to have happen is to drive down the incremental cost of producing original programming in 3D. As that happens, you're going to have that happening at the same time as the number of TV sets are penetrating the market, and that's going to essentially, I think, be essential to increasing the amount of programming. More sets and a more reasonable cost of production.
Well, that's a key comment about driving costs down, because in the universe out there, when you see that 3D is associated with a lot of feature films and the cost of going to a movie continues to increase, a lot of naysayers say that because opening weekends have not done as well this past year as they did 2 and 3 years ago, at least in terms of percentage of box office from 3D, and in particular on an opening weekend. And so costs are going up and movie attendance is going down and box office has actually decreased. On the other hand, for TV, the cost of buying that new television is a lot less today than it was yesterday. So how intertwined are we with 3D, with the feature film business, and what are some of the steps that you're talking about for all of you about bringing the cost down? Because bringing those costs down, putting on my old CPA hat, will say that will drive more demand, and more demand will drive more supply. Anybody? Vince, start.
Yeah. Well, certainly we started out, like any new technology, trying to show a breakthrough in the technology and the quality. That's got to be the initial sell, that this is something that generate the viewer's interest in paying more money or adding a value to the presentation. We're now in the phase of the business where we're concentrating on the economics, and there's models that we're presenting into the industry, whether it be broadcast or feature film, that exclusively targets that, but without the sacrifice of quality, because I really feel that 3D suffers from much more than a 2D effort or an SD to HD comparison, does suffer if that quality bar is brought down. So from our perspective, it's a kind of a two-pronged attack, maintaining the quality effort and bringing the economics. You know, I make the statement to the industry that we're going to get the cost of 3D production down to the cost of 2D production. It's just a nature of the beast. As technology gets better, as the tools get more integrated to each other, it's just natural that we would progress into a state where the economics of the technology makes sense to scale it up to fill this you know, black hole of you know, content in 3D that kind of now exists.
Just one thing to add, and I think maybe it'd be helpful for the audience to understand, at least the way I look at it. Producing a theatrical motion picture, and you see these numbers all the time, you know, the cost can range, but you know, let's say for argument's sake, producing a theatrical motion picture is $150 million for a two-hour movie. That's $75 million an hour. Okay, scripted television series, you know, vary from low ends up to, you know, higher, you know, but it might be anywhere from $500,000 an hour up to $5 or $6 million an hour. So when you say, okay, what's the cost of going from, you know, 2D to 3D, it's more easily absorbed in a more expensive project than the less expensive project. The other thing that's very, very important, especially if you're doing series television, which is the bread and butter of not just our business, but what consumers watch after sports, is the impact on the production schedule. If it takes us 12 days with a whole cast and crew producing a one-hour episode, you can't let that come out to 15 days because you've added 3D, because that, too, significantly changes the cost. So those are the things that we're dealing with.
Well, I want to add something that we've talked about. It's kind of a slang term we use with ESPN. It's called 5D. You may have heard this before, and I'll try to be in a more of a granular conversation than my friends here. When we go shoot a telecast in sports, and I will invite you all to come see one tomorrow, by the way, and you can see what I'm going to talk about live and in person on the show floor tomorrow. It's Central Hall 13632. I didn't mean that as a commercial. I really didn't. Because we're actually going to shoot our first studio show live tomorrow here on the show floor in that space. Our popular show, Sports Nation, is going to be done. We're going to do it in 5D, and here's what 5D means. Each camera position has two cameras in 3D. We take the left eye out and make that into the 2D HD show at the same time we're shooting 3D. That's why we kind of laughingly call it 5D. It's kind of a joke. But the bottom line of that joke is to what Vince has said, and Vince is very involved with us in working on 5D, to bring the economics down to go to what Bob said. You can't make the 2D show suffer, and you can't make the time the economics suffer. So for us, 5D is a way to get, in essence, two shows out of one and monetize it in a way that doesn't cost you as much as it would to go in and do a side-by-side situation. So 5D has become very important to us, and at the risk of talking about other people, it's important for all of us to, I think, start to address that when it's appropriate to help bring the price down and the amount of content up.
And I think we've seen just in the last year the ability to do what you're talking about has emerged much faster than I think people thought. At the beginning, you know, a year ago, it was still fairly difficult to do what you're talking about. And some of the shots that you want to get, you just simply couldn't get without a significant additional effort. You guys hear me? You know, now there's handheld cameras, there's, you know, the TD300 from Sony, there's small devices that allow you to do a lot of the things that a year ago were very difficult to do. And so today, when we think about a production, we think about it the same way, which is we're making a television show, and out of that television show, we're going to have a 3D show, and we're going to have a 2D show. And, you know, not thinking about, well, what will the 3D show be like and what will the 2D show be like? It's finding a great narrative, and then you have the luxury of having both an HD and a 3D show out of that. And I think that's going to help the economics, too, because increasingly we're seeing an interest in not only the 3D version of what we do, but the 2D version as well.
Are you being asked for what the 2D budget would have been when you're doing a budget?
You know, we get that, but it's increasingly less so. When we started a year ago, I think there are a lot of questions of, well, if we did this in 2D, it would be X, and if, you know, add this much for 3D. I think that's changed quite a bit, and now it's about, we're going to shoot this in 3D. Here's how we're going to do it. Here are the costs of this show that you're trying to do. And so increasingly, we're moving away from that. It's still a little more expensive, I think it will be for a while. Hopefully, we'll get to a point where it won't be. But, you know, it's still two cameras instead of one. It's still a little longer in post. There's still some things that take a little bit longer, but increasingly that gap's shrinking.
Can I ask a question for my panelists? I want Vince to ask you. I want to ask you about miniaturization and robotics, which for us is changing a lot of what we do. And I don't know what you know about that, but I think it's part and parcel of the whole discussion here.
Well, I definitely think that we could get into the size constraints and so forth. And you know, the good thing for us is we've been able to have this period of time over the last 2 years of working with ESPN to kind of concentrate on what are the production solutions in a sports environment. And the other benefit for us as a company is, you know, I already have a 9-channel motion controller. When you start talking about a robotic head or a mask camera or a behind the rim camera, it's all inclusive into what we specialize in as a company and design. So I think we're now starting to see tools that really fit into the production environment, whether we talk about what we call a nano rig, which is a handheld sideline rig that, last night, if you saw the game, it's doing the interviews, the shots on the sidelines, and getting all those things that equate to the 2D production value on a head-to-head basis. And so not only, I think, can we talk about the cost, and we could talk about the economics of the situation, the tools actually are getting into the areas of handheld and as you said, some of these consumer products that have been introduced and consumer professional products are certainly starting to change the landscape of getting the B-roll, getting all the shots. So the entertainment value day to day in the 3D arena keeps going way up. It really does. It's a new frontier, a growing market. And for us, I'll kind of expand a little bit on the Little League World Series. You know, it was a discussion with ESPN's director and coordinating producer Phil Orleans that they said, we have a challenge because all the kids are this tall. And the camera system that we're currently using isn't ergonomic to really go into football mode and shoot these kids at eye level. And this is at a dinner at the X Games. Mm-hmm. And we sat there and we realized that there was a creative limitation here that needed to be solved in the next 3 weeks. So we went back to our team and really came up with the nano rig that allowed them a 14-pound rig that could give them the production value of taking both eyes, one for 2D and one for 3D, and shooting the kids on their own eye level throughout the course of a whole Little League World Series. That's kind of where our head is at, is we need to match that entertainment value, elevate it in the form of 3D, and create technology. But that didn't exist, 3 weeks prior to the event. And we're all about, trying to team up and say, these are some of the limitations, what can we do it? And whether it's robotics, whether it's miniaturization, we had on the final 6 cameras on the backboards, capturing all of these shots. If you compare today's production in 3D to a year ago or 2 years ago, it is multiplied as far as entertainment value by the factor of maybe 30 to 50, from my perspective.
So next year or next month, Tom's going to want to rent that nano rig because he's got 2 or 3 ideas of projects that he's got in development where he's been trying to figure out how to shoot it, how to get the best shot. And if Tom's not thinking about that, there's probably 5 or 6 people out here who are thinking about what they want to do but can't quite figure out how to get that shot and how to get it done right. Moving ahead on the camera side of it, though, what are we going to see here at the show today? What are we going to see next year and over the next year in terms of cameras and lenses that are going to make this even better? It's improved for HD. I love it when I watch a football game and I can see the strings on the football. That may seem awfully silly, but in 2D or in 3D and certainly in HD, being able to get right down to that point always looks very, very good in the blades of grass. And I'm being a little facetious here, but so what are we going to see coming up that is going to make a big difference in what is visual? And what are we doing perhaps for like the LG announcement of their 84-inch ultra-high definition TV? They're the first, and others are going to be coming down the pike with that kind of display systems. So those are several questions all wrapped together. I can back them up if you want.
Well, Marty, I'll make a couple of
comments.
Please,
Brian.
First of all, to your Ultra thing, that's a different panel. And I mean that with a joke, because that's not this. That's going to take a whole different discussion about truck infrastructure and weed in the field and what goes in the walls. So I can't take that one here.
Actually, you did a good job of addressing that as a comment. Because people have been wondering.
As to cameras and lenses, that's somebody else to discuss. What I would say about the production values at our place, we're working on things like graphics, first and 10 lines, which are a nightmare to do in a 3D environment. The bottom line, for example, we call the bottom line. Our fans have come to want, they have this insatiable desire for information. You know, what's going on in other games? How many runs somebody scored? What's the yards after the catch? That kind of stuff. We have yet to put a bottom line on 3D. We've talked about it a lot. We've got some prototypes going. When you have to match the visual depth of what's going in a master control versus what's coming from the field of play with a score box, and all kind of, it's hard to do. So my answer to your question isn't about cameras and lenses per se, but it's about visual things we can do to make our shows better, and our guys are working on that stuff every day.
Well, we introduced a couple of technologies and some that are in play. One is shadow technology, where we bolt a camera onto a 2D position. You know, we had a lot of barriers for our entry on slash position cameras with the NBA and so forth, where, you know, there wasn't a camera position for a secondary operator. And so what we introduced was a shadow camera. It's a bolt-on autonomous camera that reads the telemetry of the 2D operator. We won the Emmy on the U.S. Open. We're going to use about, 15 or 18 of them on the Masters this year. You know, they're the type of camera systems that when we talk about costs, we don't add an operator to. We read the telemetry and the point of interest of the 2D operator. There's no flight for that operator. There's no hotel for that operator. There's no additional cost. So shadow technology for us is going to be on handheld cameras all the way up to the bigger box cameras. For the episodic and the feature world, we're introducing what we call smart rig technology. It's really a think tank within the camera system. So once you develop the style of where you would think about a Boardwalk Empire or something along those lines, just like lighting that you determine this is how we like it to look, so too with the 3D system and the smart rig technology, develop that look. And we have actually shot, you know, demos where, you know, the DP, the director, and the first AC focus pulling goes out and shoots with this camera system and brings back their same product, but in 3D and in 2D, without all the added layers of, you know, the stereographer and the entourage and everything else. So for us, it's getting to be an exciting format where we're starting to reduce the amount of personnel and we're making it a hardware play. And the hardware is smart enough now these days to really, start to develop a style for ESPN, a style for HBO, and then start to repetitively execute that style in the field to end up with quality 3D.
I might add that all those things that Vince talks about, here's how they relate to practicality. We'll go into a stadium sometime, to a university or a pro environment, and the stadium operator will say, oh, no. You can't come in here and put 10 new different camera positions because you're going to kill 24 seats each. I got season ticket holders in that area. I got no place to park your truck. I got this, I got that. All those things that Vince talked about brings it down to contain to basically the same footprint of space that we use for 2D. If we can't do that, this is not going to work. Mm-hmm. It's just not going to work because we're not going to be able to go into a sports environment and try to do the things the stadiums don't want you to do unless we have to write a big check for a bunch of ticket holders to move. We can't do that. It's not going to work for us.
For us, it's, you know, we don't make cameras either, but for us it's really about how do we just narrow that gap completely so that the production on 3D is no different than in 2D. And I think increasingly what we're seeing are smaller, lighter, easier to operate, doesn't require big crews around it. And, you know, just in the past year, we've seen a dramatic increase in that capability. So, you know, for us, it's going to the people we work with in the production community and saying, you know, how do we do this just like we do it in 2D? How do we close that gap? And, you know, I think through all of us who are, you know, producing and funding content, it's pushing the industry to find ways to do that. And that's what we've really been seeing over the last year.
So for all the sorry about that. So for all the people that thought it was all hype a couple of years ago, reality is coming into being now. Can we say that? Will the Journalists and the analysts who follow the business say that now we're really moving into an era of productivity. We've gotten beyond the hype.
I think that it certainly is happening. The one thing that, unfortunately, is the hype overinflames things. And this takes several years of work to get there. And, you know, what's been accomplished in the last 3 years is remarkable. And now it's going to start moving faster. But it just doesn't happen overnight.
Marty, you say, is the hype over? I mean, we're sitting at CES. It's the hype place. I mean, it just says
the hype is just
that's
beginning.
What we did here. And I did an interview with a reporter yesterday, and I said, look, can we sit? Because they asked us, why are you doing so much hype out here? And my answer to that was, let's separate the hype of this week from the way we run our business. Because they really are two separate things. The former can help drive the latter, but you can't equate them all together. I mean, we do what we do here for a particular reason, but the day-to-day operation of the business has changed dramatically in the last 2 years, and it's changed for the better, and that will fill that pipeline. I don't think any of us ever want to get past the hype on this or anything else, because if you don't, there's no show out here next year. I mean, think of all the things that you've seen when you've come here over the years of not just televisions, but all the things that are going on. There has to be this part of the cycle, if you will. And that's not a bad thing. It's just that we can't all accept it as religion. It is what it is. We have to know what it is. Then you have to run your business prudently to make it work for everybody in the food chain. And that's where we're getting to now.
Well, we're early days, too. I mean, the truth is, you know, you're doing your first live
studio show
tomorrow. It seems like every month we have a first something. You know, it's that stage of the game. Mm-hmm. We're still very early in. We've been on the air less than a year. You've been on about the same amount of time. I mean, we're still very early days. So I think you're right. The hype is good because it's natural. We're going to continue to break through and do new things. But I think the reality is that people are realizing, yeah, this is a business that's here to stay. The motion picture
sure.
business is not going anywhere. We still have 50, 60, 70% of moviegoers choosing 3D, choosing to pay 30% more to see that film. They don't have to. They could choose the 2D film. They choose the 3D film in, you know, not such a great economic environment either. So I think there are a lot of strong signs that say this is here. There are people who don't like 3D, though, and that, you know, that's the reality, and that's fine, and 3D is not going to replace HD. I think we're going to run in parallel with them. There are some people that just won't embrace it. There are a lot more that will. The vast majority will. And so I think, you know, we're going to continue to do our firsts. We're going to continue to innovate, and that's going to continue to create hype. But I think it's a more balanced hype at this point.
Maybe the word should not have been hype. Maybe it should have been meeting expectations when perhaps those expectations were just a little bit higher than maybe was realistic to achieve.
I think the expectations were that it was quick and easy.
Yeah.
You know, 2 years ago, we had Avatar being released, and that took us 4.5 years of effort. And the next thing you know, 3D is a quick and easy solution to the consumer. And it's not. We work very hard at trying to put a quality product that really mimics all the storytelling of 2D and enhances it in the 3D sector. And I think, you know, talking about that hype, I'm excited as hell because, you know, we're starting to see higher frame rates in the feature film world. You've got a parallel to all of these 2D products that are out there that are, you know, higher refresh rates, higher frame rates, higher resolution. We're well on that hype curve, but I think it's paralleling what the consumer wants, as opposed to this white elephant wow factor that's 3D. We're starting to get into a business of 3D, which some people could say is dull, you know, that it's now a business or a commodity. I think it's quite exciting because the viewer is on the cusp of seeing some amazing stuff, some of the slow motion techniques and stuff like that. There is no comparison to 2D when you see that shot in 3D. There is absolutely no comparison. And, you know, some of these tools are becoming more available to us for higher frame rates in capture and higher frame rates in display and stuff. So I think the hype curve is well engaged that you're going to see some amazing stuff in the next few years in 3D, in 2D, and I think that production techniques are going to fit more of an economic model for scaling more content on the screen. So it's an exciting time from my perspective.
I would say that, well, only my tongue and my sleek cheek slightly here, that the real problem was Vince and Jim. because they created something that we all aspired to in a very, and you're laughing, I don't mean that, only slight tongue in cheek. They created something we all aspired to 2 years ago, and it took you 4.5 years, you said. Yeah. But the response by the public, by all the different categories to what they did was so incredibly enormous at the time that we all wanted to get there. We all wanted to have more. We wanted to go back to the buffet. And it's hard to build a buffet, but we're getting there. But you have to give them all the credit in the world for what they did. But they raised the bar very high, very fast for all of us. So it's all your fault.
Yeah,
for sure.
So the cost has been brought down. Production techniques are under control. So we can have a more readily available supply. Now we need demand. And can some of that's going to be met, because by this time next year, many, if not most, new TVs are going to have 3D built in. On the other hand, we still got to get people to subscribe to that particular service or buy it. How do we do that? How do we make sure they're going to get good value for it? HBO has always had a subscriber base in terms of its business model. I've got Watch ESPN, for example, on my phone, which means I'm authenticated through Time Warner. Is it that? Is it a la carte pricing? What is it that's going to spur demand from the people in this room and basically consumers all around the world?
I think when HD started, it was actually an inverted business model. We believe one way, other networks do things differently. We don't believe in charging extra for 3D, HD, HBO Go. We're in the business of enhancing what our product is so that we can drive our subscription business. Other people have seen it. The studios are doing it in theaters, as something to price separately. And I think that will still be the case in 3D. In our case, we will use it as a tool to satisfy subscribers with the value of an HBO subscription. We think it also has to be, they subscribe to HBO because of our programming, so it has to be good programming, and that means a broader base of the movies and eventually original programming. I do think, though, there's one thing that you missed which needs to be in place. We very specifically decided to offer 3D on demand as opposed to a linear channel. Others have done linear channels. We have to deal with our distributors who have limited amounts of bandwidth down to consumers. And the one thing that we saw in HD, and I'm sorry to say, SD is still not dead. There are still a couple hundred million SD TV sets out there. So we know that we cannot go to our distributors and say we need one channel. We have 26 HBO and Cinemax networks. We cannot say that we need 26 SDs, 26 HDs, and 26 3Ds. The bandwidth is not there for that. Fortunately, in our case, about 90% of our subscribers have and significantly use on-demand, and we think on-demand television, certainly for scripted programming, I don't know about live, but on-demand is going to be, I think, increasingly used by consumers. And that will help with the bandwidth. But you need the TV sets, you need the production cost, but you also need the capacity to deliver a totally different channel.
You know, the fact that there's as many people still on SD really creates an opportunity, including making sure there's some education. Because right now the penetration rate for HD flat panel sets is about 70% of U.S. households, and the number of households with two or more is only in the mid to high 30% range, which means that next TV that they buy and the one after that, as they take the one from the living room and move it to another room, is going to be 3D enabled. No doubt about it. But from an education point of view, people still don't understand it. I took the opportunity to do some market research last week and went into, let's just say, the local store of one of the national chains. Two of the four TVs that they had for showing 3D and a little... Sorry, I did that twice now. Three times and you're out. two of the three were not working. And then we went into their high-end area of the show floor, and their glasses had run out of charge. So the education has got to go, and it might be an isolated instance. Hopefully it is an isolated instance, but there's got to be a certain level of education that gets out there to the consumer, similar to what Best Buy found a few years ago, that people were bringing those new HD sets home and not thinking they needed to buy HD service. You've got something on that, please.
We have been to this rodeo before, and we were there with HD with a very big way. You would be shocked if you knew that how many subscribers today, over the last 10 years, and when, I should say, they actually got an HD subscription on their video provider. You'd be shocked. It was lesser than we thought all along. Having said that, you had different things going on in the marketplace. We don't set retail price. We're like, we sell Kleenex, basically. So think about it. So you've got Charlie Ergen at Dish Network saying, I'm the home of free HD in national ads. You've got Comcast in my house saying, here's what it costs for a month subscription to HD to get my stuff and Bob's stuff and whoever. There's so many different ways that the retailers go to market. This is not an easy task. And I will tell you, I'm going to say it again for the very purpose of this hype machine, if you will, it took a long time for the vast majority of SD subscribers to stand up and say, I want HD service into my new big screen TV. Just, what I guess, what, Sam, a year and a half, 2 years ago, we went in Peg 4 out to our head ends of our distributors, and just last year we took our main feed and went 16 by 9 so as to avoid what Bob said about having two different SD and HD pathways to every distributor that we had. And so suddenly on those leftover, pardon me, SD subscribers, and in my kitchen, for example, now I see a 16 by 9 picture with black on the top and black on the bottom because we went to our distribution system. We thought all hell might break loose. Well, it didn't. But all of these things are in play that doesn't make this easy. I guess the point is, this is not easy. We just can't think, let's go show some people some TV sets and how it works, and it'll all be away. It took 10 years to get us from where we launched with HD to here today. 3D's in the same cycle. It's not going to be overnight, so let's all, we like the hype, let's all understand it. Let's make sure we know where we are, where we're going.
I want to add one thing, and the folks at Discovery, and we ran into this in the early days of HD, the retail stores had no way to show it. You know, there was a company that came up with a server that essentially Discovery and HBO put product onto, just so that there was a mechanism to properly display programming, because there was nothing being delivered via the distributors at that time. How it's going to be presented to consumers is extremely important.
Yeah, I think that, I mean, there's definitely an opportunity for someone here to figure out that solve, because I think part of the challenge is that it's got to be easy for the consumer. They've got to know that all this stuff is available. Mm-hmm. And, you know, increasingly, there's a lot more available. We've got sort of the three that started, really drove HD. We're here driving 3D, which is great. And I think people just need to know that. I think there's a general lack of awareness of how much is out there. And then I think a lot of people experience what you experience in retail or otherwise, where it's difficult to try it out. It's difficult to sort of get the information you need. So I think as an industry, we have to figure out how do we get that message out to the consumer? How do we enable them in retail? How do we enable them to understand what's available? And when we do that and when they understand, look, I can get movies, I can get sports, I can get documentaries, I can get all this content that's great in 3D, you know, I think that's going to motivate them to move, but there is a sort of step that's a hard one to get over that I think as an industry we're still kind of figuring out and working through.
Well, is some of it the taglines? I mean, Brian mentioned that certain shows are available on different platforms. There was a full-page ad for the BCS game in the LA Times on Sunday that said, on ESPN, ESPN 3D, also available at ESPN 3. Tagline, flip over the same page of that newspaper, and there was an ad from HBO for Look, and it said, watch it on HBO, also available on HBO Go. And then Bob mentioned early in our panel today about the early days of HD with HBO and CBS, and I don't quite remember about HBO, but I know CBS used to put the tagline on the opening of the show that said also available in HD. If that occurred more readily and if the presenters on different shows made that as a statement, would that help? And it's not too different than what you see in the movie business when you see a trailer on TV also available in 2D or in 3D. Just that constant barrage of information. What of those, or if all of those, will help to drive demand?
One thing we have to watch out for, I'm not a marketer and don't write the copy, but when that was happening, and it, especially in broadcast stations that were pushing a lot of HD, I think it was well over 30% of the public who saw that, and they believed that they had HD. And, you know, it was being transmitted on the SD feeds. So, and that took a long time, as Brian was talking about, to overcome. So, however that gets communicated needs to be done properly.
So we're here at the international, emphasize that word, international CES. CESO right there on that monitor, it's all over on that thing. What's going on internationally? We tend to be U.S.-centric. We're talking about a lot of things from a United States or North America point of view, but what is it that's going on in the rest of the world that this group should know about?
You should take that one first.
Huh? Yeah, I mean, we're seeing, I think, in certain parts of the world, probably just a little bit ahead in terms of in-home 3D than we see in the States, particular in the U.K., Italy, and several parts of Asia. There's a big appetite. We provide our content to outlets around the world, and we're seeing a real appetite for that. There are more and more channels cropping up. China's just launched, actually, a 3D channel and supposedly looking to launch 9 more in a couple of years. So I think it's a similar process whereby, you know, it's still early days. There's still a limited amount of content out there. One of the encouraging things I saw when I was in the UK a few weeks ago, in you know one of the TV week guides that they have, one of the shows that the only show that they really featured as the show to watch that week was a 3D show, and you know it wasn't because it was a 3D show; it was because it was a good show that they were recommending people watch. And I think that's a huge step. That if we can get to that point where you're not watching just because it's 3D, you're watching because it's a fantastic show that is in 3D, and you get whatever that value creates for you. And so I think we're seeing, it's a very similar patterns. I think there's a lot of encouraging things we're seeing overseas because I think they really are just a little bit ahead, 6 to 12 months ahead of where we are here. And so there's, particularly in the UK, where we're seeing a real fast adoption and a lot of talk and a lot of quality hype about what's going on there because consumers are actually watching it. They're actually, taking in their home and they're people you can talk to. Say, yeah, I've had this now in my house for a year and I love it and here's why. So I think the rest of the world is really hopefully a great indicator of what we're going to see here over the next 6 or 12 months.
We have a full-time 3D feed going to Australia now of ESPN 3D. Goes to the Foxtel cable service there. We have some rights issues because of the nature of our business. We have to take things in, take things out. But we are actively involved with our hand in the air saying, bring it on. We can get it to you. If the rights are cleared, we've shown the X Games on Sky in London. We've shown a lot of things over there. So we're readily available with the things that we have that are cleared from a rights standpoint to make those available to our international distribution partners. That's very common for us.
Any other growth factors we should be talking about?
I think we're all going to be looking at different devices. I mean, I can't speak for Tom or Bob or anybody else, but I know that we so focused on getting this puppy on television for the last year and a half, and it's a very hard thing to do. But I think now that we're kind of getting up to where we're comfortable in our own skin to be able to know we can put a television show on the air every day, that it's time for us to start looking off the different devices for those companies that might be out here in the hype cycle out on the floor that that want to talk to us about showing our content on their devices. We feel strongly about something we call the best available screen, and consumers are embracing that now. So wherever they are, they want their content, whether it's HBO Go or whatever it is. They want to watch on phones, they want to watch on tablets, they want to watch on television. So we'll work to try to feed all of those conduits, if you will, in the very near future.
I'd like to pick up on that with devices. The you know, as you know, we're rolling out HBO Go around the world, and you know, I know I've said previously that 3D without glasses is something that I aspire to someday, but I think it's a long way off. But there are capabilities, particularly with portable devices, handheld devices for 3D without glasses. And we're keeping our eye on that because that's something that as we take all of our HBO programming and make it available across devices, you know, we see as a potential that might be very interesting.
I think that the other devices are actually critical to the entire thing being accepted, because I think if you know as a consumer that you can watch quality 3D content in your home, but you can also watch it on your phone, if you can watch it on a gaming device, wherever you are, I think you're much more apt to say, yeah, I'm in. I can see this on all the devices I have, just like I can today, where I can watch HBO Go on my, you know, tablet. I can watch, you know, I have the choice. We've done some deals, distribution deals with companies like Nintendo's 3DS device, where our content is running there. And, you know, very quickly, within the first month, we had 500,000 people watching our content on that device. So I think there's, and it's because, you know, it's a very nice device. It's glasses free, which is great. And, you know, there's a hunger for the content. There isn't much yet there. So I think the more we can take it and say, okay, we're going to, as long as we can deliver a quality product, we'll put it on all these various devices. I think it's good for us as a marketing tool, but it's also, I think, a great way to sort of set the entire platform of 3D is not just in the theaters, it's not just in the home. It's really everywhere you go where these devices are available.
So to grow some of that content, you know, next week we've got Beauty and the Beast being reissued. Lion King was reissued by Disney last year. Nightmare Before Christmas has been out. Star Wars Episode 1 this year and Titanic. So does that speak to getting more and more library product converted, perhaps, to help grow the installed base?
Well, I think it definitely speaks to that. I think that the process, as Bob mentioned, is a costly one and a time-consuming mm-hmm. one. You know, I mean, so it has to be targeted to the right product. But, you know, certainly when done correctly, it's a vehicle for increasing the archive value of, you know, any product out there that warrants the effort.
So Ishtar ought to not be pretty high on the list. Right?
But, you know, speaking to the, you know, the personal viewing devices and the different devices that people interact with or consumers interact with, I think to Bob's point is some of these smaller devices are the ones that are the entry level to glasses-free displays, and you know, they're personal viewing devices as opposed to community viewing devices. And I think we're going to see a strong, you know, surge of the acceptance of glasses free within that domain, and you know, whether we talk the gaming parallel, whether we talk, you know, getting HBO on the go or ESPN, you know, it's certainly going to be targeted through some of these displays in a way that you know, is new, different technology than what's being used on a 65-inch or 80-inch display in the home.
I'm sorry, Bob, go ahead.
I just wanted to say one thing in terms of timing, and you talk about library content or older content. Typically, when we decide that a show or a project is worth doing in 3D, we will focus on new episodes going forward before we go back to, you know, redo old, because that's where the viewership is. But the one thing that people need to, I think, have a dose of realism is to understand the lead time. You know, we today are beginning production for a miniseries that will air 3 years from now. Series programming, you know, the decisions are made and then the production begins a year, year and a half before the show airs. So that's not necessarily the case with other forms of television, but it is with ours. So, you know, getting the cost in line and then seeing the impact on the screen takes some time.
Vince mentioned something we probably should have spent more time on, personal viewing devices. We really should spend more time on that. I sit in my office and watch screens all day, and I watch our friends at Sony run commercials for their 3D personal camcorder for consumers. And I think when people start taking those out to the soccer games and the basketball games and so on and so on, and bringing it home and then utilizing that television set more with a device they bought to show their family, mm-hmm. We didn't even talk about it much here today. That's really going to be a big key into getting people to be accepting of the use of these devices and making them into an integral part of what you do in your home. That's real important.
Even still photography.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's true. Still photography as well.
Well, before we take a couple of questions, what are we going to be talking about at this panel 12 months hence?
I'll take
put on your crystal ball.
I'll take a stab at that.
Please.
It doesn't make me comfortable. It is a higher resolution video, call it Ultra HD if you want, call it whatever you want. It's going to be talking about here today. It makes me uncomfortable because for us, that means the infrastructure of mobile units out in the field that can produce that kind of quality video really don't exist today. When we transferred from SD to HD back in 2003, there were probably 80 trucks on the road, and two or three of them were HD at the time. There's probably now, I'm guessing, Vince may know better than I do, there's probably 120 trucks on the road now working for us and CBS and Fox and so on and so forth, and very few of them have that capability. If that hype cycle starts on that in the near future, we have to sit back and think, and we meaning all of us and Fox and CBS and Bob sometimes and so on and so forth, where does the money come from to pay for that infrastructure to build that kind of video to get into a house? That worries me. That could be a year from now.
I think we're going to be talking about, one, the obvious, the advancements in the displays. And, you know, even if you walk the booths today versus last year, the glasses-free sets are just infinitely better, and I think we're going to see that same leap next year as well. Whether it's ready for market next year or not, we'll see. But I think we're going to be seeing a lot of that. But I think what we're really going to be talking about is what we just started to talk about, which is the proliferation of 3D devices in every size and form. And I think you're going to see an acceptance of 3D on mobile devices, gaming devices, etc. It's going to be something you carry with you as opposed to just the monitor in your home. And I think that's going to be a big part of what we're going to see over the next year.
Vince?
I think 12 months or the future, you're just going to see more and more of visual reality on your devices that you interact with. I think whether it's a resolution play or whether it's a 3D play, there's going to be a visual reality to what you see. You know, I was talking to Bob a little bit about some of the subtleties of 3D and some of the most emotional impactness of 3D, not on the big 3D wow moment, but just a dramatic interchange with two individuals and stuff. So I really think that the future, what it holds for us, is this visual reality. When we see that display, whether it's an HBO miniseries, whether it's a natural history event or a sports event, people are going to relate to it as if it's a part of their lives, as if they were there. And I think that's really what we're going to see. And if that's a resolution battle for us, we're going to take it on. If it's a 3D battle for us, we're going to take it on. But I do think that the displays are getting so close to that, difference between what's presented to you and what you engage with. The future is quite exciting.
I think resolution is a very big issue, but I think, as was said earlier, it's a topic for another session. I do think, if you're talking about 12 months from now, I think 3D on portable devices is going to be perhaps what's being talked about next year at the show.
Mm-hmm. All right. We've got a couple of questions that have been handed to me, and we've got about a few minutes left. Will the 3D TV industry realize significant growth via watershed events such as the coming 3D world feed from the London Olympics, or will those things just come and go as the industry evolves at its own rate?
Well, I think, I'll start. I think all those things are going to help, just like they did in the past. Big events motivate people to, if they're particularly interested in the Olympics, that they're going to be motivated perhaps to go buy a 3D set. So all those things are going to help. I think at the end of the day, 3D TVs are only as good as the content that's put on them. And so, whether it's huge events, whether it's, a television show you want to watch every night, it's the content that's going to drive people eventually to adopt these things. So I think it's a combination of the big events, like the Olympics, like the BCS Championship, and then it's more day-to-day as well.
We're in an odd business in that we and our competitors do a lot of different things. When I saw the NBC announcement today, I loved it. I thought it was great. I'm so happy about it because it brings the level of water in the bathtub up for everybody. And come the day that Bob eventually does a fight or two over on his service, things that go on, it just all raises the whole entree up, and I like that. That's what needs to happen. It's not one thing or another thing.
And I think we sometimes get too focused on these one watershed event type things or the avatars of the world, and it's not that. It's if you attend a championship or just every college football game, it was a surprise to me to see 116,000 people that are engaged in this sport. And I think the business model has to work on a documentary. It's got to work on a college football game or basketball game. We have to make it work on a miniseries. This formula to be successful has to roll into those sectors and not just be targeted towards something that's every 4 years. And I think we're well on that path. Everybody sitting here is well on that path of doing exactly that and making these business models work.
So one other question here is, this may go back to education, but what is being implemented to combat the complaint of eye strain? Vince?
Well, shoot it right. it's easy. Just acquire, in the right methodology. And I think that, eye strain is a byproduct of an attempt to shoot something that hasn't been balanced right or been, put in the right corner.
I wanted to read that question, but at least from my personal point of view, I hear that less and less. I don't hear that as often anymore. Maybe you do, maybe. And there are some people whose eyes just won't focus correctly for 3D.
Well, I think it's also about understanding what 3D is as a creative tool. I think early on there's this, desire to do a lot of things in the negative space, and that pushes eye strain. So even if it's shot well, there's this tendency to sort of put it in 3D. And, what you learn over time as you start to do more and more is that there's a place for that. There's also a place for a lot more subtle 3D. There's a place for, a headshot that can have an emotional impact in 3D that you just don't get in 2D. So I think it's more and more, there's less of that because I think people are understanding what to do with it and how to use it as a creative tool.
I think the beauty of Avatar, and I went to see it almost as a student, was how 3D was not overused, it was not gimmicky, which many people with the new technology tend to do. And when 3D is used properly, when people really get up the learning curve, that's what we spent this last year doing, was training our people on how to do it.
Some of the best 3D is when you forget you're watching 3D. I think.
Exactly.
And that's that was my experience with Avatar. Is halfway through, you're just watching a great movie and you're immersed, and you forget that you're in a 3D theater with glasses on.
And to the point, last night, what was most enjoyable for me, and I'm one of the purists in this whole exercise, but I sat in that theater, but it felt like it was a big living room with the largest TV set that you can imagine in front of you. And I just heard the people talking about the plays. The crowd was consistent and engaged in the game, and it was a big difference. They weren't there for a technology wow. They were just there to enjoy a presentation, and it really, it was refreshing to me to witness that because, of course we're selling the technology. Of course we're selling, this new wave of entertainment. But at the end of the day, we want people to enjoy it and have a good time. And it was really interesting for me to see that we've gone beyond the eye strain, quotes, and into, wow, what a great way to watch the game.
I think the beard helped.
Let's just say it didn't do any harm.
One thing, Marty, about this, the word for us is presence. It's not about things coming off the screen at you. Our research says viewers are engaged when you feel like you're there. You're present at the event even though you're 1,000 miles away. That's what works in 3D for us.
And with that, our time is up. I want to thank everybody for their great job as a panel. Thank you.
That concludes this program. This material was recorded and produced by Mobile Tape Company Incorporated of Valencia, California. More information about other available media may be obtained by calling 1-800-369-5718 or on our website, mobiletape.com.